Hello, and welcome to Alive or Just Blethering. This is part two of our Slipknot special with Alan Swan. Please be sure to tune into part one if you haven't already. Hit us up on our socials at EOGB Podcast on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. Send us an email, eogb.podcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Anyway, without further ado, enjoy the rest of the show. Fantastic you bring the word alienate in, because I think that is precisely what All Hope Is Gone did to me.
Next album.
I think that's where, like, I stopped listening. I hadn't actually kind of gave the last four out. Like, basically All Hope Is Gone onwards, I hadn't actually listened to it properly until the past couple of weeks, where I've played a lot of it. And don't get me wrong, there's definitely, like, super cool bits to all those albums. There's like absolute riffs where I'm like, that's the coolest thing ever, but there's so much disappointment as well for me. Like, but I'm at the same time, like, I'm still like walking around the house like humming wee bits in my head, and it's just like stuck in there and like having fun with it. But yeah,
I think we all agree here. All Hope Is Gone is probably my least favourite Slipknot album. There's absolutely some jams on that album. I will say I really enjoy Sulphur. I really enjoy Dead Memories. We sort of talked about it earlier. Snuff is maybe one of the least Slipknot songs to exist, but holy shit, like, it's up there with Vermillion. Like, it fucking really gets me deep and appeals to me. All Hope Is Gone as well, I think, is a great song.
Just to bring a point that Alan said as well, how Duality, you've heard it 1,000 times, but you could hear it today and it still sounds as good as it did the first time you heard it.
I know.
Psychosocial.
Mm-hmm.
That's Slipknot's Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's their Enter Sandman. It's overplayed, overdone. It's been memed into another fucking universe.
When you said
psycho shit show. Ruined, yeah. That song.
When you said this about Psychosocial in the chat, and I was just like, I can't hear Psychosocial without hearing the banjo version.
Oh,
we all heard the banjo version. Like, you're saying that Psychosocial is Slipknot's Enter Sandman, is their generic. You know, I would disagree. I would have said that was Duality. I think Duality has that crown for the band. I hate Psychosocial.
I still love it. And as much as I've just like given it some really probably some shade with the comparisons, I think it's still a bop. Like, if that comes on in a nightclub and I've had a few too many JDs and coke, I am bouncing off the walls. I am going to make a mess of something.
Of course you can.
Absolute stomp to that song.
Exactly.
Just like,
like, yeah, no, it is, you know, just a straight beat on it, like I know all of that,
but it's really still boring as a Slipknot song. It's incredibly boring.
And this and Psychosocial encompasses All Hope Is Gone for me. It's a rock album. Anyone could have made All Hope Is Gone, in my opinion. Almost anyone could have made All Hope Is Gone. Like, I want to almost say the percussionists are barely audible in the album. Just about every song has a fucking guitar solo in it. I'm not shitting on guitar solos, but like, for Slipknot, it seemed a bit excessive. It was just, and I really sort of remember thinking this at the time, we all sort of, or I think Alan, you said disappointment. There was a massive disappointment with All Hope Is Gone, because I was like, in my personal opinion, anyone could have made this album. This isn't necessarily a bad Slipknot album. This is just a boring rock album.
It's a four or five piece band. Just,
yeah.
I think I described it as a badly made grunge album in some places.
I think you were trying to say it was a poor Alice in Chains album or something.
Yeah. I heard the Alice in Chains comparison. I was like, that's wild. But yeah. Fair enough.
You listen to sort of especially later Alice in Chains stuff, which is also pretty gash. Like, it's just got formulaic, unimaginative, accessible, yes, absolutely, radio friendly unit shifters on it, and that's it feels like that's what it was made. I'm not saying they sold out by any stretch. We've talked about this earlier, how they already were a product, but it was, they didn't sell out, but I feel like they didn't, I don't know whether they didn't try or they specifically wanted something that was by the numbers. I don't know.
I think by 2008, you know, one thing I do sort of remember about Slipknot, and it's almost inherent in having followed the band for years, is almost every other week there was a rumor about these guys splitting up. You know, there was a rumor about these guys hating each other. There was a, you know, they couldn't be a band anymore. They couldn't be in the same room as each other anymore. They're going to break up. This is their last album. Corey Taylor says this, blah, 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 blah. And I think All Hope Is Gone is the culmination in all of that. You know, we saw the exit of Joey Jordison after this album. We saw the death of Paul Gray, not related to a bad album, unfortunately. You know, the guy chucked it on a drug overdose, and an absolute massive loss to the band. But I think, you know, with all due respect, that maybe helped them reset after this album.
Definitely.
Whatever their thoughts of this album musically are or not, and whatever frustrations or whatever was in the band, I think by the time we get to chapter five in the, or sorry, yeah, chapter yeah,
the
five.
The grey chapter.
The grey chapter. Is it five, the grey chapter?
I think it's five, the grey
like
chapter.
0.5 or something, yeah.
Yeah. By the time we get to that point, that's the band we have now.
And when I listened to All Hope Is Gone directly into five, immediately, and I mean like within the first strum, I'm like, fucking yes, we're back.
Yep.
It's like, yep, there we go. That's the whatever was missing from that album, it's in this one. And they're clearly, I mean, there's a good, is it 6 years between, or seven?
2008 for All Hope Is Gone, 2014 for The Grey Chapter. So they'd been gone, like, I think Paul passed away in 2010?
10, yeah.
So they were sort of on a two-year cycle, I want to say. No, they weren't on a two-year cycle, it was more than that.
There was a decent, it was 2004 for Volume 3, 2008
yep.
for All Hope Is Gone.
Yep.
And clearly, you know, you lose a key song, two key songwriting members, effectively, because
two founding members, no less, as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So Paul was a big into the songwriting, and Joey was as well. Joey was one of the probably the second most memorable, third most memorable mask, if you wanted to call him that.
I think we have to remember as well that Joey played guitar for Murder Dolls.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, multi-instrumentalist, he was an incredibly talented individual, and he wasn't just an awesome drummer that tucked himself into a car seat and played drums upside down.
Well, it's, the other experience as well for me was, like, All Hope Is Gone is when I became kind of, like, jaded towards Slipknot. That's yeah. where I'd, like, I'd personally given up on it. I was like, it's not for me. Don't get wrong, I was also, like, the death metal gatekeeper elitist dude at that point, which was also the worst thing to be, but it was like, just for me, it was just like, I'd walked away from it. And it wasn't until like years later that I then kind of started to like go back to these kind of things and stuff like that, and like re-listen to it. And then this week is like, it's just been like absolutely leathering through these songs and having a great time.
We're currently in 2006 on the podcast, going chronologically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to bands in 2008, your Parkway Drives, Bleeding Through, we've had Bleeding Through mentioned, Poison the Well, Darkest Hour. These were bands that were releasing albums sort of every few years, and it was one album was better than the last. 2008 comes along, Slipknot released All Hope Is Gone, and it's just that they're not as extreme anymore. They're second fiddle to this wave of metalcore that came through in the mid-2000s is now fucking blowing them away. And my tastes only kept getting heavier, and Slipknot were getting lighter, if that's the sort of antithesis of that, you know?
I'll tell you what All Hope Is Gone did have. Some cool masks. They were good masks for All Hope Is Gone, 100%.
V-Good masks. Probably my favourite Corey mask, actually, the one with the stitches up the side. Is that that one?
No, that's like...
Forgot about that one.
Well, the Corey one there is like the sort of the gas mask, but everything's been taken off and it's got like the sort of the one eye.
Oh, I'm like thinking of Volume 3.
Is that not like, reminds me of old Greg from Mighty Boosh?
That's what I was meant to say. Is it? No, the Hitcher. It's the Hitcher. With the
the Hitcher, that's it, yeah.
Solo Polo Vision, mate. I'm on that shit. Like, All Hope Is Gone, I think, and I sent it to you guys in the chat, has the most boring Slipknot song I have ever heard.
And it's also so many solos. I hadn't noticed until you pointed it out, and I was like, I just put it on the other day and I was like, oh, there's another solo.
And there's another one. And yeah, and it's track 8, Gehenna. I just don't know what it was about that song. Listening to it bored me to tears, and it sort of just sums up the album as a whole for me. And it was... I don't want to shit on it too much.
There was actually one, like... There was one that was like... As an album, I didn't... Yeah. I'm probably the same as you guys, didn't really enjoy it, but it's also actually probably the one that I walked away with the most liked songs on Spotify. Like, I've added them to my like things, but again, there was a couple of just banging riffs that was just like, this is ridiculously cool, but then it's just ruined by the rest of the song.
What songs were those?
So I had Vendetta, Butcher's Hook, and Wherein Lies Continue. So, like, songs that they're probably, if you went to see them, you wouldn't see live.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, like, really cool bits in it. And for me, it's, like, what I call a Pennycook riff, which basically means it sounds like Pantera.
It's by no means... maybe we're being a bit harsh on it. I don't think it's a particularly bad album. It's not, like, a shit record. Like I say, the bangers on it for me are Sulfur, Dead Memories... And Snuff, again, Snuff, oh boy. But Vendetta as well, I think, like you're saying, Alan, is a pretty good track as well. It's just, as a Slipknot album, could have been fucking anyone that had written that album. Like, you know, just a sort of middling to good rock album as opposed to a balls-out Slipknot album.
That energy and extremity wasn't there.
Yeah, totally.
Like, it didn't feel like 9 grown men in boiler suits freaking out. It just didn't have that.
It sort of felt like a bit of a pre-midlife crisis, if anything. You know, the they were just sort of doing the record, the intensity was completely gone, and I think for better or worse, something you do sort of always associate Slipknot with, because they talk about it openly, is like hate and like powerful emotions and stuff like that. And the hate was gone from that album. It's not to say you hate your mom, hate your dad, or hate your job, or whatever, but just like we've all got frustrations in our lives, and Slipknot openly talk about how I think I seen an interview with the band one time. They're like, "Oh, we want to be a punching bag for these kids. Like, this is why we're here, or this is how we can." This is how we want to contribute and stuff like that. And All Hope Is Gone just seemed to be ironically lacking that. Like, all hope was gone because this was a pretty dull record as far as these guys were concerned.
Like, for me, it went from, like, people equal shit to, like, a dialed-in album.
Yeah.
It just, the anger was gone. I don't know if they now were in good wages, they were happier people. I don't know. Like, they maybe just didn't have that same, like, raw connection.
They probably all had kids by this point.
Yeah, like, they're all at home. They've got their, like, 401ks and stuff like that all just kind of, like, lined up. They've got their, like, car on finance, their nice house.
Yeah.
Like, picket fence.
they've got the life by that point, easy. Like, they don't have to do a thing. Like, they did not need to release an album or any more albums. They can at least some of the guys anyway. Corey Taylor, for example, he could literally just sit back and do
and be interviewed by Kerrang over and over and over
once a week.
Did anyone listen to his CBT or whatever his like solo side project was that maybe came out last year or something?
I think Corey Taylor by that point was like the same for Rob Flynn for me. It was just like he'd absolutely went Messiah. I can't take him seriously anymore.
I've still not watched that video. I need to.
Oh man, you need to watch that. That's Megan.
Yeah, Rob, I suppose. Flynn's
slam poetry.
I suppose I don't personally sort of perceive or have an issue with Corey individually, or really anyone in the band per se. But yeah, when I've seen his solo stuff. And just like, I'll follow the guy on Insta and I'm sort of seeing the promo material that's coming out. I was like, I don't even want, even the look of this doesn't look like something I want to listen to. So I'm not going to say anything on it either way. But other than to say I've not listened to it. But yeah, fair enough.
I really did like that when the Grey chapter came out, it was just a breath. It was, from a Slipknot perspective, it was a breath of fresh air.
Return to form, like for me personally, to say, what did we have? We had All Hope Is Gone in 2008. We've lost Joey. We've lost Paul. It's 2014, and this is what they come back with. I was like, yes, boys, well done.
Yeah, and it's a really listenable album. I think it's one I can go through. It's got its flaws. It's not perfect.
I think the fact they've got a song called Sarcastrophe and Kill Pop just ruined it for me. It's just like absolutely ruined it for me. I was like, come on guys, like get a thesaurus.
I don't know if I get the joke around Sarcastrophe. I don't what's your issue there?
I don't know, there's like a little niggle in the back of my head that it just absolutely winds me up. Yeah. Just like, it just absolutely gets my goat. But saying that, when I listened through that album, I did add AOV to my liked songs on Spotify because there's just a ridiculously cool, big, massive riff.
I love AOV. Like, AOV, yes. Yeah, so
agreed.
And that was like, again, going through the albums, and I was like, okay, maybe I have been missing out by not listening to Slipknot all these years. And I was like, right, okay, there's definitely cool stuff out there. And I kind of regret having missed it, but at the same time I think like I may not have appreciated it if I didn't listen to it all in one big bang like I did. Yeah, had fun.
I mean man, at the end of the day, if you don't know, you don't know. But like I quite like Sarcastrophe. Sorry to say, AOV is amazing. The Devil and I think I liked Kill Pop at the time, but going back to it, I'm like, oh, this is dreadful. Skeptic, I think, is amazing. I think we can understand that Skeptic is about Paul, and I think it's a pretty I think the whole album is a tribute to him. Interesting to see if we see a similar tribute to Joey, but Skeptic's a really great song. The Negative One, Custer, track 11.
That's the absolute. That's the like the bopper.
Yeah,
it's like the dad moves come out.
Yeah, when that comes on. It's... Yeah, the cut me up and fuck me up and den 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 den.
See, words like that, that's Slipknot. That is yeah, like, that, exactly. That's a return to like, yeah, people equal shit, spit it out, surface it. Like that's just like Heretic anthem again. Like that's just like singable, silly, over the top. My mom's not going to like me listening to this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, that's it.
And you know, I want to imagine so obviously I was like 14, 15 when I first heard Slipknot, the first album. I want that image of a 14, 15 year old in 2014 taking this album home and the mum having to come into the room and be like, you're not listening to that again, and trying to take it off them. And, yeah. You know, and it's interesting that I'm just, you know, we talked about the whole nu metal thing. They're not nu metal anymore by this point. Like nu metal is long gone from the vernacular. So it's now they're just a metal band, and
is like new wave of American heavy metal.
Yeah,
like Lamb of God and stuff like that. It's like that current wave that's still ongoing. I'm not sure, but yeah.
It's unmistakably Slipknot at the same time.
If Slipknot and Iowa were still new metal at the time, I would almost argue there's a sort of, with the return to form of the Grey Chapter and We Are Not Your Kind, I would almost think there's still that, I think there's still those new metal origins, like in the same vein that like Korn still exists as new metal and Limp Bizkit still exists as new metal, albeit the new Limp Bizkit album, you know, that came out at the tail end of last year, I have just as much forgotten.
Dad Rock, was it?
Well, there was a song in it called Dad Vibes, wasn't there?
Oh man, the first half of that album is banging. Absolutely adore it. I love the first half. Once it goes to the kind of acoustic-y second half, it tails
shite.
Off.
It's but shite.
The first like four or five tunes, I can't remember how many it is, but it's just, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I'm a massive, ridiculously massive Limp Bizkit fan for a guy that's generically used to just adore death metal. And I was like, no, Limp Bizkit are class. Like,
I agree, though, that it's an album of two halves. And the first, well, not even a half, I think it's the first third, like you say, it's like the first four tracks. I'm like, oh, this is banging, this is a good return of form, I'm enjoying this. And then literally track five comes in, I'm like, wow, oh God, this is done. Skip track, oh, it's the same as the last one. And then the rest of it was just horse shit. I was like, oh, well, that's that dead. Yeah, they're one of those bands that I don't think they could make a reasonable comeback. Whereas I think Slipknot making five and then going on to make We Are Not Your Kind, which in my opinion is takes all the flaws of chapter five or the grey chapter and just takes it up another level. And We Are Not Your Kind is my third favorite Slipknot album after Iowa and the self-titled. I think it's better than volume three in my opinion.
I don't know, I don't disagree with that, and I think I know entirely where you're coming from. I love We Are Not Your Kind. I love The Grey Chapter as well. I think coming back to Volume 3 revitalised a lot of that album for me. So I don't know where I could sort of put those two albums. The one thing I will say about We Are Not Your Kind is I cannot listen to it in its released format.
Oh yeah, you said the playlist that's like all the skits taken out and stuff.
One of the first things I did with this album, and it's the only time I've ever done it with any albums, like anything else out there that's got filler or skits or whatever little intro tracks or whatever, this is the only time I've ever done this where I took the album and I took out all the 1 minute skits and bits and whatever, because it's unlistenable as it's released. There's one, two, three. All right, maybe there's only three. I don't know if there's a couple of intros. I don't know if there's a couple of intros into songs or whatever.
There's maybe 3 minutes out of a like 40-minute album.
Exactly.
But it's like insert coin, death because of death, and what's next? Just I don't know what it was, but it absolutely boiled my piss and did my head in, and I couldn't listen to it. So I made a playlist and called it "We Are Not Your Kind" brackets no filler. Check me out on Spotify.
I've just looked to see who the producer of both "We Are Not Your Kind" and "The Grey Chapter" is.
Same producer,
it's Greg Fiddleman. Greg Fiddleman. I'm just looking through his albums on Wikipedia here. There's a lot of them that we've spoken about. He was an engineer on "Golden State" by Bush. He was an engineer on "Audioslave" by Audioslave.
Nice.
He was an engineer on Volume 3.
Nice.
Just talked about. And he was also the engineer and producer for Lulu, the worst Metallica album.
Ooh.
Oh, that's not one you want to put on. But then he's worked with Metallica. So he basically is now Metallica's go-to by the looks of things. He did Hardwired and S&M2 producing and mixing. But then he's been Slipknot as well. So I think he's a name that has found his niche in being sort of a metal mixer and producer now, and I wouldn't be surprised if he comes around in the next Slipknot album.
Yeah, no, I think
he also done Adele and Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication and System of a Down as an engineer. Some big albums on his back catalog there.
Bit of range from the gentleman there. Yeah, where we are now, so I suppose that's brought us up to speed a little bit with Slipknot. The Grey Chapter, absolute return to form. We're Not Your Kind just continued on from what I think they re-established themselves there. And I think, personally now, sort of looking back over their back catalogue, what we've listened to and what we've discussed, like, I still fucking love this band. Like, I have... There was that dip around All Hope Is Gone. They were obviously silent for a few years due to issues, but they've came back swinging, and I'm really glad for it. To say, when I first heard this band in like 2000 2001, and I was like, no, they're fucking weird and they're just gimmicky and they're not going to be around for very long, to now be like, we went to go see them in January 2020 at the SECC, and I have not had that much fun at a gig in so fucking long. Like, I just lost myself with
they
it
are,
and just went
without a
with
doubt
it.
I will pay 70, 80, 100 quid to see them every single time.
Well, you're going to end up doing that very soon, yeah.
I will not have a problem. Every time like an expensive gig comes around, I always get on my high horse. I'm like, fuck it, 80 quid for a fucking ticket, blah, blah. Who the fuck pays these prices? This dickhead pays those prices. You know, I have to say though, like Slipknot's live show, it was the first time I saw them. It was 2020. It was the first time I ever got to see them, and I absolutely loved it. It was one of the most memorable, fun, exciting shows I've ever been at, especially for a big show. It was also my first time in the Hydro, I was so used to big gigs being at like the SECC, where it's just a stage in a box and it sounds like shit and you don't actually get to see anything. But the Hydro's really good at making things feel more intimate. I felt like I felt like I was relatively close to the band on stage,
mm-hmm.
and the interaction with the audience was everything I wanted it to be. From watching the Disaster Pieces DVD, watching like the live and listening to them live, they put on a show and they sound incredible.
So who? Lav, we saw the band in 2020, just before the panny happened, January, SECC Hydro in Glasgow. How many other times have we seen the band? Alan, have you seen them?
Again, that was where it was, by the time that they actually came around, was All Hope Is Gone came out.
Right.
So by this point, I hadn't really had an interest to see them by this point. And I had seen bits and bobs of them. Like, again, I was like at Download when they were playing, and I'd be at another band and come and see the rest of their show because they were like main stage, so they were on later than anyone else. And I have seen loads of bits of it. I've seen the DVDs. I actually recurringly watch the Download 2019 footage one.
Yeah,
worth watching if you've not seen it. Yeah, no, their live show is like ridiculous, and would recommend it to anyone that can go see that. But when we were talking about earlier, I've seen like 50, 60 gigs a year for however long. That's actually one of the bands that I've not seen, which is ridiculous because it's Slipknot.
To be fair, I saw them not particularly intentionally, but in 2004, I don't know if anyone will remember this, 2004, I'm sure I've mentioned it before, they tried to do a Scottish Download.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and it was at Gig in the Green, it replaced Gig in the Green, and it was on Glasgow Green in Glasgow, funnily enough. And I think Slipknot weren't the headliners, but they played one of the days. I was lucky enough to go to both days. So that's the first time I saw Slipknot. And yeah, can't remember much from it. It's 2004. 18 years ago, but pretty much remember the thing I remember the most is some of the friends I was there with. a female friend of mine was trying to be very active in the mosh pit, and absolutely no one was engaging with her because she was a girl, and she just stood there in the middle of the pit like, come on you fucking pussies, just because I'm a girl, and just started fucking windmilling into cunts. It was great. But that was the first time I saw them, and then I didn't see them again until 2020.
I would not have gone to see them if Grey Chapter and We Are Not Your Kind weren't as absolutely like as good as they as I think they are.
Yeah,
if they had ended on All Hope Is Gone and then just toured those toured for the rest of their days and just phoned another album in here and there, I probably wouldn't have been interested in seeing them.
No, agreed. It's definitely down to the them coming back and coming back to form.
Mm-hmm.
is why I'm still into the band 100%.
Yep, that's why we're talking about them today. Otherwise, it just would have been another one of those. We probably end up just having a conversation about the first two albums, perhaps.
So, interestingly, as much as we've all been fans of this band for nigh on decades, we've only seen them a handful of times, sort of each.
Yeah, which is
it happens.
Bizarre, really. Yeah.
Well, I had the chance to see them again in 2000 and maybe 16, 17. They came to Glasgow and toured with Korn, but I chose to go see Funeral for a Friend in a much smaller venue. So, played the same night as Faf. And I was like, I'm not paying that money because half of it's going to Korn and I don't give a fuck about Korn. So I'm going to... That must have been the Great Chapter tour.
It will have been. I remember that being an event for a lot of my friends going to that.
Yep.
And skipping that one. I think what really sold me on Slipknot coming was the fact that they were supported by Behemoth.
Yeah.
And that was they were and are one of my favorite bands now. I've been listening to them since 2011. I think I'd picked up one of their albums. The name of it escapes me. If I want to say Evangelion, but it's not that.
Yeah, that was a banging album.
The one just before Nergal got really ill. They made that album, absolutely blew me away, and to then get to see them live, and they're doing what Slipknot were doing 20 years ago, but they're bringing extreme metal, and I really like Blackened. Death metal into the sort of mainstream almost.
That's a band that is that was a really cool band that I used to go to see was Behemoth at the Barfly in 2007 or 8 or something like that with Suicide Silence.
Yeah.
So we got to see those two bands with 50 people in the room, which was just insane because they're now doing headlining and Bloodstock and stuff like that, 15,000 people or something like that. We got to see them with a handful of other people. It's just
I mean seeing Suicide Silence at the Catty, and that was fucking mental. That was absolutely just a crazy show. Watching people getting piercings punched out of their face was this was crazy. There's one of those bands that were coming around in the mid 2000s that were showing Slipknot how to do it properly, if you know what I mean. They were making extreme music. They kept it extreme. I think sort of going in another direction with that. So to see them in 2020, to be one of the last big gigs before the pandemic really set in as well, has made this sort of. I don't know whether just I keep it in a really holy place. I give it a lot of praise because it was the last big gig that I went to before the world fucking changed. And I don't know, going back to gigs now, it still doesn't feel real.
I have not been to a gig since. Still not been to a gig since the panning. I'm in this weird place though where all of my musical friends live 200 miles away. So yes. The people I would normally attend gigs to, that's fine. I've been to one or two gigs by myself before if I really wanted to go see the band. And there's been one or two I would have gone to where I currently live by myself. But things just shifted and changed and didn't quite make it. And, there's maybe not the same enthusiasm to go to a gig by yourself as it would be with your pals. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure the last gig I went to was Slipknot. I don't think I've been to a gig post-Panny. I was supposed to join you, Lav, at...
Mogwai. You were meant to come up for Mogwai. which...
Well, I did come up for Mogwai. I just went somewhere else and didn't actually go to the gig.
But then after that, since then, I've been to see Knocked Loose and Devil Sort of Soul.
I think I've probably been to, like, if you include local gigs, maybe like 30 gigs or something like that. Like, but I think like the one that I actually got to go to in the middle was Bloodstock, where it was like one of the like kind of test festivals that they had. That one was particularly cool because it was our mate's band was playing, so I got to go take photos, like getting backstage and stuff there as well, which was just like mad. So like the whole thing was just like them being like, if we get the big stage or anything like that, we're taking our mates with us. That's it, 100%. That's only we're going to go do that. And sitting next to Napalm Death in the green room next to our green room was just like just came out of the pandemic. The pandemic's still not over. Like we're just in the middle of this. And we're like sat next door to like one of the biggest extreme metal bands that's ever existed and stuff. And it was just like, that was, yeah, wild. But absolutely, oh, that was so cool. Take me back.
Like, one, sounds incredible and like an amazing opportunity to be a part of that as well. But for that to be like one of your first experiences post-panny, oh, good lord.
Man, it was freaking out as well because it was like, we went from not seeing our mates. This was the first time I'd seen a lot of my friends that live in the same town that I do for like a year and a half. Yeah. And seeing them all. I spent a fair chunk of that just in the campsite chatting with them. And that was it.
Not even there for the gig. Not even there for like to see the bands necessarily, just to like actually have that experience with your friends.
And it was like, but there's also like the kind of other side of it where you're a bit on edge because it's like you hadn't seen other people, then you're suddenly surrounded by 15,000 people. That was like an experience in itself.
I still get like that. I still get even now, like I was out with my kids today and we were in like the Lego store at the St. James Center and it was rammed.
Oof.
And I was like, I don't know how comfortable I feel in such busy environments these days.
Well, the weird minging part was there was a COVID test on the ground that was just positive.
Yeah.
It was like, oh right,
so what do we do now?
Oh, that's how this is how this game is going. Okay, cool. Like someone clearly got that positive test and was like, well, I'm not showing that to security. Like, and left it there and I was like, all right, great.
No, I'm in the same place and maybe I'm still a little bit apprehensive to go to gigs. Like I've been to several weddings now, where including my own, where it's the you know there's groups of people and it's sort of where you were sort of post sort of pre pandemic. So really, I should. There's been a sort of few bands sort of passed by that I maybe would have wanted to see, but they've maybe not came close enough. I'm also pretty close to Manchester, so that's quite a good access for me for gigs.
The next one for me that I've got tickets for anyway is probably Rage Against the Machine in August.
Yep.
And I've got tickets for Holy Fawn at the end of September.
Ooh, lovely.
Very excited for that one. It's at the Attic, so that'll be fun. And I'm tempted to get tickets for Angel Dust. I think that's next week. But I have to actually get the tickets for that. I don't know how I feel about getting to Glasgow at the moment.
So where does that leave us now for Slipknot? We've definitely smashed out a two-parter. So I'm quite happy with that. I think we've all had we all seem to have very similar opinions towards the band, similar experiences.
There was a piece of research that I was managed to miss at the very beginning, but when the first album came out, just to kind of understand where it was in the grand scale of music, was the number one hit song at the time was Boom 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 by Venga Boys. Was the same week that the Slipknot album came out.
That is man. A fact and a half. That is a brilliant little factoid. And, well done.
How more and could you
number two
add
was
context?
Bring It All Back by S Club 7. So, just to get a vibe of when Slipknot came out was the same time as Venga Boys was on top form.
I actually found another little tidbit that this goes back to an early AOGB sort of thing, I found the Scottish position for some of the tracks from the first album. And I think the self-titled album, so I think it was Wait and Bleed, that had a Scottish release. Or it has, at least, it charted in Scotland.
The Scottish charts, good on them.
So good old Scottish charts, number 25.
Not bad, man. Nearly top 20.
Nearly top 20. And I thought that was, again, I'd love to know more about these Scottish charts. The Spit It Out, which is my preferred song over Wait and Bleed, got to number 26 in the Scottish singles.
They are also a multi-nominated band, but are actually a Grammy winning band as well.
Yeah.
I'm just seeing now, they've been nominated 10 times. They've had 10 Grammy nominations and they won Best Metal Performance for Before I Forget.
Oh, there's your song there, Keith. Left Behind. What number do you think that got to in Scotland?
19.
Oh, 22.
I'll let it down. Should have given it more listens in Scotland.
Actually, talking about going back to some of the live performances you mentioned there with the Grammys, was I remember the Disaster Piece DVD, like, I think it was on my Bebo page.
Yes.
Where you could add their video and stuff. Was the Joey Jordison flip drum kit.
Yeah.
Vertical, where he then spins around while strapped into this drum kit in like a racing car seat or something like that, while doing like a drum solo and stuff. And it was just like, again, that was like where I realized that Slipknot might be really, really cool. It was like, yes, LA.
Yeah, like thinking about it now, like maybe if I saw that, maybe purely because Joey did that first. As far as I'm aware, Joey did that first, right?
Tommy Lee had done it years and years before, like decades before.
Tommy Lee.
Like,
yeah.
I don't really care for Motley Crue either. So, like, to
you've
me,
got no appreciation. You have no appreciation for old rock.
No, hang on. Remember, I messaged you some weeks ago, and it involved Motley Crue. I was away for a weekend. I was in my accommodation. I was listening to an 80s rock playlist on Spotify, just like 80s rock or whatever. And I think Trooper had played, or it was Maiden, right? Iron Maiden had played. And then this song started, and I was just like, whoa, like the tonal shift from Maiden into what this song was, because I didn't realize what it was at the time. I was just like, it's like a song from 2010 snuck into this playlist? Like, what the hell is this? It was like the bass and the tone and the volume of it, and like it was just so chunky and fat, and the riff is like jim jigga jim jim jigga jim jim, and it was like Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue, and I was like, maybe I underestimated that band.
They sounded good for the mid-80s, like they really did.
Going from Maiden into Dr. Feel, whatever the Maiden song was, and going into Dr. Feelgood, I was just like, god damn, that was intense. But what I was going to say about the drummer thing was, okay, I wasn't aware Tommy Lee did it first, but knowing that, okay, Tommy's done it and Joey's done it, like if I saw that now, I'd be like, that's a gimmick. It was a gimmick at the time, but because I didn't know anyone had done it before, I was like, that is fucking cool. That is fucking
sick. I think
sick.
I've seen Travis Barker doing it, like in person. I saw Blink in Manchester, and I'm sure they did the whole flip. It's strapped into like a cage, and it all just lifts up, and yeah, it's like a Brembo seat or whatever with like 5-point harness, and it just smashes away. But then they always lift it up and then sort of tilt them over and tilt them back. But I think Tommy and Joey do it where they like get suspended right over the audience, and then come back.
Tommy Lee actually like brought over the audience, which was just like insane, upside down. Going over the audience, which is just like, especially considering that they weren't like an extreme band by any like stretch of the imagination. Like that was always like an interesting thing, where it's like Slipknot was extreme, so to do that made sense.
Yes.
But for Motley Crue to be like girls upside down in the drum kit was like, that's definitely different.
As someone who's always had a perpetual fear of you know, fairground rides and the shows or whatever. Like, if that fucking
and the terrible again, graffiti that comes with it,
I'd be running the. I would be screaming to go faster. Like, I'd be in the opposite direction. Like, get me the fuck out of here! You're not swinging a drum kit over my head. Like, this is. I don't trust these roadies. I'm getting.
Out of here. Interesting. That was why Van Halen used to ask like really dumb stuff in their contract.
Is that the brown M&M's?
The brown M&M's story is they would ask for brown M&M's, a bowl of brown M&M's, because that would mean they know that the person has actually read the contract. They had an incident where a stage like partially collapsed or something.
It's not like there's like lights rig was so heavy it would just like kill a man if it came down or something like that. That was really like. The safety was like paramount.
So they made it really like obvious to them if they turned up at a show and the contract hadn't been read properly and that to the letter, that they would then be like, well, we're not going on until XYZ is actually like double checked, triple checked. So it gets like brought up in like the prima donna sort of look at the stupid requests that musicians make. And they were like, there's a fucking genuine reason that we make you read our contracts and it tells us if you have or haven't. Anyway.
Fair it is. I was not aware of any of that. But
also reminds me of Wayne's World 2 where it's got like the roadie guy.
To beat him off with his own shoes.
And he's like, I had to kill a tiger with a shoe.
When you said brown M&Ms, that's exactly where I thought you were going with this. I was like, what? I didn't realise that was a reference to something that actually happened.
Anyway, yeah. Cool. So, we've covered Slipknot.
We have covered Slipknot. Fucking hell. What a journey it's been. If these guys keep on putting albums out like they have done the last couple of albums, I'm always going to have a place for Slipknot. Like, I'm always going to have an appreciation for this music and everything that's been released up until now and stuff like that. But, you know, I see no reason why, what was it called?
All Hope Is Gone.
Short of another All Hope Is Gone, like, you know, I'll always give these guys a shot. Any album they release, I'll always give it a listen.
Looking to the future, there is an unreleased album that is TBA, and it was apparently all the stuff around the All Hope Is Gone sessions. So that could happen. But also, on a note of things that we have actually heard, the Chapel Town Rag is fucking excellent. It is one of my fucking the best Slipknot songs I've heard in years. And I loved We Are Not Your Kind. This is like, if we get an album of the Chapel Town Rag in their like somewhere, count me in.
All Out Life as well. That was another single. I thought that was off We Are Not Your Kind, but All Out Life is another single that they released sort of around about, or sort of separately, similar to Campbelltown Rag.
I don't know, actually. I did not know.
Yeah, I used to miss both of those songs.
Give it a listen.
My way through the six albums, but yeah, I'll need to give that a listen, definitely.
Smashing. Well, if that concludes the epic Slipknot journey, is it time for our next segment?
Oh, what are we listening to?
What are we listening to, Alan, for your benefit, if you've not heard before? What are you listening to? What else other than Slipknot have you been listening to, if you've been listening to any sort of new music or any newer bands or anything?
The one that I've actually been listening to in a lot is the new Rammstein album. And I love it. I'm revisiting my youth when it comes to listening to Rammstein. Like, that was like my gateway goth kids, industrial ridiculousness, full like new rocks choker again, just like revisiting that stuff. And that new album is ace. Like, they've absolutely, like, the past couple albums that they've brought out have just been brilliant. And there's like folk that I know that didn't like
What Are You Listening To
fans, and like absolutely adore it. Another weird one was do you guys know The Hell?
No.
Never heard of The Hell?
No.
It's like a, like, it's hard to describe. It's one of these kind of like joke bands, but the joke is that it's not a joke. They take it very, very seriously in a jokey way. And they actually have what's called a hardcore opera. So it's a hardcore music, but a rock opera about him running late to work. And it's, if you have the chance, absolutely listen to that. Proper, like, again, Pennycook riffs in there. Heavy as.
The Hell.
Yep, The Hell. And the final one is the new Employed to Serve album, which is one of my favourite things I've heard.
Oh,
potentially
dear.
Ever.
Oh dear.
That is my favourite thing.
Oh no.
Ever. Sorry. I love a Mingan groove riff. It's my favourite thing.
I have been an Employed to Serve fan for so long, and like that latest album, I was so disappointed by it.
Oh really? Yeah. Man, the production is through the roof as well. I absolutely adore it. It's just my thing.
I've got every Employed to Serve album on vinyl. I have been to see them live, I want to say 5 or 6 times. Mind seeing them in Opium in like, was it 2017? It was fucking crazy. And then this latest album came out and I was like, what is this?
Really?
I was like, what is this? It's just... Oh, nah.
What don't you like about it? I'm so confused.
It's just not Employed to Serve.
Penny
Cooker,
love it.
It's probably... it does have, like... It's got its qualities as a heavy metal album. But it's just not an Employed to Serve album. It's missing... It's missing the things that I love about Employed to Serve. The techie mentalness is all gone for these sort of, like, slower grooves, which, you know, I can imagine the Pennycook crowd totally getting into with that, you know, that it just feels like there's something missing and I can't put my finger on it.
All right.
And I think I've given it a couple of listens, but my like the previous album, Eternal Forward Motion, is the last album by Employed to Serve that I absolutely thought was like, this is fucking great.
That's so interesting. I just assumed it was like the best thing that's ever came out ever, and I absolutely adore it. I love a groove riff. I'm like, that's exactly where I sit with it, and it's absolutely adore it. It's very interesting hearing someone that really doesn't like it. it's the one I tell everyone to listen to. I'm like, yeah, you need to listen to this new album, man. It's amazing. That's so bizarre.
I've not heard it. I am. A general Employed to Serve fan. I don't know them particularly well. Most of the stuff I've heard from them I've liked, but I've admittedly not given the new album any time, and kind of had sort of been privy to Lab's opinion of it beforehand as well, so it's a bit like, ooh, maybe I'll avoid that, but maybe I need to go make my own mind up. The new Rammstein stuff actually is, I quite liked the last album. Like, I quite liked Rammstein, the self-titled, the 2019 album. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was... That was awesome. I've not heard the new album. I've heard the two singles off it, like Zigzag and Dickatin, and I'm a bit like,
Those are like the two joke songs from that album, I suppose.
No,
like,
I can imagine. Yeah. I'll definitely check it out, though.
Only thing I've listened to this week that actually was like, ooh, I'm going to listen to that again. There's a band called High Viz. They are, I think they're supporting... or playing with Drug Church and the band that are on next week in Glasgow. So if they're playing, I think I might, that might tip me over into getting that ticket for that gig that I've been asked if I'm going to go to a few times themselves. I also listen to, again, Turnstile. Once a week, I think I listen to Turnstile because I just think they're fucking excellent. They're one of the most sort of exciting bands at the moment. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's really too much. I listened to the new Parkway Drive song, Glitch.
Mm-hmm.
Nah.
Yeah, I've not heard good stuff. Like,
it's dialed in. Phoned it in. Nah. Sorry, guys.
That's a shame to hear. I have genuinely... only been listening to Slipknot. I've caught up in a couple of podcasts because I do listen to quite a few, but I have just been smashing I've listened to each album at least two or three times, maybe with the exception of All Hope Is Gone. But yeah, I've really been listening to a lot of Slipknot. But instead, the weekend, I had an empty, had my house to myself this weekend. Mrs. was
an
away.
Empty. I've not heard that phrase in ages.
the vernacular of the youth of Slipknot, and smashed part one of Stranger Things. Watched all of those episodes for part one. So I think that was like 7 episodes. And to say each episode is at least like an hour and 10 minutes long.
It's so long.
Is brutal. But I was pretty keen because my wife hasn't watched it. She wants to watch it, but she hasn't seen all of it. And I was just getting sort of fed up waiting for her to catch up. So I was like, I'm just going to watch season 4. Is that all right? And great. Fucking loved just about all of it.
Maybe I was going to say, one of the things I've listened to this week is the soundtrack for Stranger Things, because the music choices I've always been like shit hot on every series of Stranger Things. So I strongly recommend anyone who's even remotely into Stranger Things look up the soundtracks, because they're always just perfect.
No, thanks for reminding me, because there is an official Stranger Things playlist. There's also an official AOGB playlist for anyone who may have forgotten, if we've not mentioned it in a while. Just search Alive or Just Blethering, the podcast. We update it with tracks of every album we've covered. We might need to put in more than 3 Slipknot songs, though.
Oh, that will be tough.
It will be tough.
That is Women and Children First tough. Like,
but that's Titanic, right?
We might actually just have to make a Slipknot playlist.
Ooh. Controversial. AOGB, the Slipknot
Diaries
recordings. Slipknot Diaries. Oh, I love it. That's amazing. I just really wanted to chew out Stranger Things. So looking at that playlist, they've got a lot of stuff in. I did 17 days ago. So thanks. I will definitely check that out. But yeah, if you're a Stranger Things fan, it took a while for it to get here, but I know everyone's talking about this bloody TV show, but it's pretty fucking good, so get involved.
Yes, well.
Thus concludes our first two-parter.
It does. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Again, if you want to join in the conversation, at AOGB Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want to send us an email, aogb.podcast@gmail.com. We're wide open. Get loving the fan mail. Really happy with it.
Alan, if anyone is enjoying your smooth tones, where can they catch up with you? Where can they see some of your shit hot photography?
I'm on the social media. Alan Swan Media Photography. I get involved. Yeah. Posters, music videos, photos, DJing, other bits and bobs. As long as it's metal music, I'll probably do something about it. Yeah.
Nice one, man. Cool. Thanks very much.
But next week, Keith, it's your turn.
Are you ready for this, lad?
No, I'm not. I'm actually just remembered what we had the conversation before we hit record, and I'm already sizing up bits of cord to hang myself with.
Well, we spoke about this before. I'll give you a choice, right? And you can, or not, it's up to you. I can give you my favourite album from the band. I can give you the album I think you'll like the most, or I can give you the album that I was suggested to listen to first. So, the band or Dream Theater? We're finally going to talk about Dream Theater.
I've brought up at least the last two choices that I've made in both the conversations. I've said, this isn't the best album.
Right.
I want the album that you heard first.
That's not my favourite album.
Play by the rules, man. Play by the rules.
Oh, no, that's terrible. That's not my favourite album. That's not the one I wanted to discuss. The one I heard first.
What introduced you to Dream Theater? The first time you heard Dream Theater, you're like, ooh, I like this band. Ooh, I want to spend an hour and 20 minutes listening to Mike Portnoy fart into a fucking microphone.
Oh, calm the fuck down. Is this how this is going to go, is it?
It's just how it's going to go, man.
Right.
I like that you're both suffering now.
I'm bringing him down to my level. I'm bringing him in.
So, because this is right, we'll not get into too much of the conversation. We'll just go straight for it, will we? Right. Okay. Right. So the first album that I was told to listen to, and the first album I did listen to, and so not my favorite album. I'm gonna have to flip it a little bit. You might be lucky because I think this one's a bit shorter. It's actually only 7 tracks.
Yes.
7 tracks, but still 1 hour long. We'll go with Train of Thought by Dream Theater.
Train of Thought.
I was recommended this one as it was, quote, at the time, their most sort of new metal-y sounding-ish album, which once you hear that, you'll be like...
An hour and 9 minutes, Keith.
Yep.
Jesus. Okay.
You're not much better off, to be fair, because the album I really wanted to talk about was Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from a Memory, and that's 1 hour 17. So you've saved yourself, what, 8-9 minutes?
Saves me from going mad, I'll take it. Brilliant. Okay, well, does anyone else have anything that they'd like to add about Slipknot?
One bit that I hadn't mentioned, but I'm choking to, is we were talking about the skits before as well. Is that most bands are very, very good at making skits work in the album, whereas I feel Slipknot, a lot of them are just, they exist. Then it suddenly, it stops, and then it's the next song. There's, like, almost no purpose. I'm definitely with Keith with the idea of just, like, removing them. So they don't need to be there. They don't add much. I like their experimentalness that comes with it. But I would like it if they fitted with the album better and like went into stuff.
I think I said it in the chat. They love an intro track. Almost every album has an intro song, and I don't know it's to anyone's benefit.
Mm.
So I'm not...
Something to take away. Definitely something to think about next time I listen to it.
Yeah, with We Are Not Your Kind, definitely they annoyed me. They didn't so much annoy me on the other albums, but they're not free of filler. Every single album, that's for damn sure.
It's no Sum 41. It's no all killer, no filler.
Exactly. Those guys don't even know what filler is. It's just all killer.
Oh no, absolutely, all killer.
Wonderful. Right, who's taking us home, Lav? Lav, would you please take us home?
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We have been Alive or Just Blethering. Do check us out on our socials at the OGB Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Next week, you'll probably end up... Thank you for listening to part 2 of Alive or Just Blethering. Do Slipknot.
I'll need to record something in. I'll need to do something and be like, guys, this is a two-parter. Bye.
Good luck with that one. Enjoy. But the next time you listen to Alive and Just Blethering, Keith is going to take us through Train of Thought by Dream Theater. Can't wait. Good night.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it'd be fun.
Good night.